Welcome to another episode of the Greg Hughes Podcast. Every week we bring you stories of people who face the tough stuff head on and come out stronger on the other side. Today's guest is the absolute definition of that at just 31. Francie has built two thriving businesses right here in Donegal. He's the driving force behind Intensity Fitness, a massive community-focused gym, and ECA Donegal, the county's first elite coaching academy franchise, which has already qualified 80 new coaches. But his path wasn't straightforward. Long before running packed facilities, his journey started in his mum's garage. Even more defining was a major turning point in his personal life. Facing a two-year prison sentence, which was ultimately replaced by a 240-hour community service order, it was the moment that sparked a complete turnaround. Through fitness, education and confidence building, he didn't just rebuild his own future, he dedicated his career to transforming the lives of others. In this episode, we dive into his philosophy that your future self will thank you for doing the uncomfortable, while the ultimate remedy for mental health isn't comfort, but doing hard things, and how, in a post-COVID world of isolation and remote living, getting out, getting strong, and finding real social interaction is exactly what people need. It's a powerful conversation. This is Francie McGinley's story on the Greg Hughes Podcast. Francie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
How are you getting on?
All good. I can't complain.
Good stuff. When you sort of look back at your younger self and you see where you're at now, have you exceeded your own expectations?
Yeah, by a lot. I probably had a lot of limiting self-beliefs when I was younger, but always had a good bit of ambition, I would say. It was just probably finding the right thing I was passionate about. Even in school and stuff, the attention wouldn't have been great, but for some other subjects, I would have been really locked on for. But school wasn't a place for me, so probably...
No, ditto.
Yeah.
Didn't suit you.
A wee bit of probably questioning myself into when people were going to college and stuff like that. Like, what was I going to do in my life? Like, was I going to be somebody who was unemployed or... I had no idea what the path of success looked like for myself.
And was it that you weren't academic or you just, like, if there's something you're interested in, you're all over it? Mm. If it's something you're not interested in, you just zone out.
Funny enough, I made a post about this on social media the last day. I says, I'm probably blessed that I was a bit of an idiot. I says,
excuse me, I was the same, so you're grouping me in here.
So I just said, like, hey, a lot of A-level students will get themselves into college and into jobs and stuff, and hey, they make a very important decision in their life when they're 17 or 18 to go into college and do a career from there on out. And I always say the only test I ever passed in school was the dyslexic one.
Yeah.
I used to actually, when I was in Irish class, I am quite fortunate. Like, a few teachers knew what I really struggled to read aloud, especially like Irish and stuff like that. And they used to like skip me on the pattern, you know, it would go me and then it would just go to the next guy. They'd never put me under any pressure. But primary school and stuff, loved it. Best days of my life. Secondary school, not for me.
I was never really diagnosed with anything. I'm not sure if I have anything or not, but I was kind of similar in secondary school. The way it manifested itself with me was intensely shy and just become a refuser. Mm-hmm. You know, I've memories of mom or dad or both at the gates of school, and I was like, I am not going in.
Yeah.
I am simply just not going in, to the point where, you know, eventually I left early, but it was only if I had a job to get into. That's the only way they would actually concede for me to leave.
Yeah.
And the more I missed, the more difficult it was to go in and the further I fell behind. So that was me refusing intensely invert and shout. What was your school life, secondary school? How did it manifest itself to you? Because we've normally have a way of dealing or coping with.
Yeah, funny enough, I would have been huge on sports. So I probably went to school. I actually repeated my leaving cert. Secondary school in St. Eunan's College, repeated my leaving cert in the deal. And it wasn't because of bad behaviour I couldn't get back into St. Eunan's. I missed 99 days of my leaving cert year. So they weren't willing to give up a position to somebody who didn't really participate in the year. I probably got a field for money when I was like 17. I started working for my uncle, just answering phones in a taxi base. And now looking back, that was a short-term one because, hey, €50 a day is great when you're 17, but when you're an adult, that's not going to do much for you. So
this time I would have been very happy, but I know what you're saying. Yeah.
So I'd say, like, I was probably really, like, my mum always said to us, like, when parent-teacher meetings came around, like, she didn't care where we were at academically, but she would just say to us, like, manners-wise, she was like, if I have to go into that school and come back out with a bad report for you, yous are dead when I get home. Now, we never died, but I solely believed, like, we would have knew about it if we were ill-mannered. So, yeah, couldn't wait to get out of school, to be honest. And people, like, even my mates would be like, oh, I'd love to go back to school for, like, one day and all. I'm like, nothing. That would take me back there again.
Yeah.
Nothing.
You were just glad to get out of it. So, really, I mean, obviously, it was going to be obvious that, you know, whatever wasn't working for you in the school environment, it was not going to really make you fantastic at third level either, if the truth be told, because you're in the same sort of a learning space, and the same problems going to raise their heads, aren't they?
Yeah, I'd say I would have just probably, not that I'd have got the points to go to college anyway, but like, I was friendly with a lot of boys that went to college and stuff. I don't think I could have lived on that lifestyle of Tesco's vodka and pasta every day, like, so as I say, fortunate to be an idiot, because I probably would have never found my passion if I ended up going straight into third level education. I would have been blindsided with having to use my qualification, which a lot of people do. They use their qualification, and maybe they're not happy in the situation they're in, but they don't want to waste them 4 or 5 years.
No, but I think we have got better in this country, and I'm going to give Simon Harris a bit of a shout out here. Believe it or not, no one fall off their seat, but certainly during his time, there have been greater efforts to recognise that not everyone goes to third level, but there are alternative pathways into enhancing yourself or becoming the best version of yourself. Mm-hmm. And there have been, you know, there have been great inroads in that, I think. Because I know people in my life wouldn't traditionally have gone to third level, but are finding themselves going down the apprenticeship route or a different way of learning. So we have made some progress, I think, even since, you know, when you were considering what to do with yourself after second level.
Yeah, I think it's like a real debt. Well, you get put a lot of pressure on too when you're in your final year of school.
For sure, yeah.
You've got to make all these adult decisions that an underdeveloped mind, I would say. And like, I even said it, like, leaving cert, you've got to put your hand up to go to the bathroom throughout 6 year, but you've got to make the biggest exam of your life happen a couple of weeks after leaving. So there's a lot of responsibility without ever having had responsibility.
And you're not really even referencing in that, though I know you're well aware of it. Things are changing a little bit in this area as well. But your entire school life being focused down into 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With that young brain, with the pressures, it's, I mean, maybe it's a test. Maybe that's how we get resilient young people. I don't know, but it doesn't seem the right way of doing it.
Yeah, I always, like, a guy actually have, like, a mindset coach, and he said to me one time, like, me personally, it's like parent, adult, child, chain, like a traffic light system. Mm. And, like, me coming from, like, sports and stuff as well, like, everybody that I ever, like, interacted with was in a parent role. So you're in school, you don't talk back. You're at home, you don't talk back. You're at sports, you don't talk back. But all of a sudden, you've got to be the person that's made this adult decision after being a child your whole life. So I probably wasn't great until maybe the last maybe 5 or 6 years of making adult decisions, to be quite honest, because I was so used to playing that, like, child role, I would say.
It is true, you know, and it's not just you or me, or it's an actual reflection of sort of the way we do things in society. You're a townie, are you?
I'm a townie.
So what was it like growing up? I presume it's pretty normal life for you post-school. So what were you doing for work-wise, and how do you find living in that environment?
So I'm a council estate kid. I'm proud, I always say. I love growing up in Letterkenny. That's why, like, I'm really community-driven, to be honest, because I grew up in an amazing town with great opportunities and great people, and how you always got a crack at a whip, like. And I would probably say, like, I remember for, like, when I, like, my 14th, maybe even a wee bit younger, my 13th birthday, I asked Mum for a lawnmower. So I walked around the whole of Glencairn, knocking people's houses, asking them did they want their grass cut. Some people definitely seen me coming because I was cutting jungles for, like, €10. But I would probably say, like, now, like, if you ask your mum and dad at, like, 13, you know, like, social media is a good thing as well, too. I even think, like, you know, I was saying, like, there's alternative educational routes like, using your hands and stuff. I think, like, Letterkenny, maybe, like, 20 years ago, like, even going to the gym, I used to look at things on YouTube where you get like a men's health magazine. Like now it's like social media. Like I think like the largest percentage of what students want to do now is be streamers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they probably don't have enough life experience to share. Or a lot of them maybe don't have like them interpersonal skills to like be streamers and stuff like that. Mm. It's people who are at an older age who've done a lot of socializing and are able to do that kind of stuff. So I, growing up in the town, hey, great. I probably didn't do myself a lot of favours as well too. I'd have been really sports orientated and stuff like that. Ended up getting myself in a bit of baller growing up and getting a bit of name for it. And
was that like scrapping or being the hard man or what?
I probably had a wee bit of a chip on my shoulder for other reasons and so. But hey, I would always say, like, everybody likes to say they weren't the bad guy or something. Like, I'd have been a real vigilante when it came to, like, looking out for my mates and stuff like that. But then I say the persona probably took over that I wouldn't really rock a real big physique, and I would have been kind of small until I was about 16 or so. So people would have heard about maybe who I was or knew who I was, and then, like, you'd have been out maybe at, like, teenage discos or at a football match or something like this, and altercations would occur. And unfortunately, it probably chased me around for a good part of my younger adult life then as well, too. And, hey, there was definitely an ego a part of me, too.
Like, so was it like, you know, Francie thinks he's a tough man, I'll have him next time I see him. So did you sort of get a reputation whereby, you know, you couldn't go out necessarily and enjoy yourself, your reputation went before you because, you know, well, I'll have a crack at him, see how tough he is.
Yeah, so I actually didn't drink until I was about 21 or so, because I knew any night I went out, there was a possibility of trouble. Like, and if it wasn't them, it was their big brother or their cousin, and it kind of haunted me for a while too. Like,
it's a horrible old, I mean, it's stressful, isn't it? I mean, it's not a fantastic way to live your life, because you talked about your love of Letterkenny.
Yeah.
And that sense that, you know, and then, of course, too, there are people that might not want to hang out with you because they don't want to be caught up in it, or those that maybe want to hang out with you to sort of, you know, steer you on, or because they fancied getting into it. So there's no wins in it, really, for
there's
you.
There's no wins in it. And definitely had a bit of an ego about it. I thought maybe, and I fed into the life that I was a bit of a tough guy then as well, too. Probably held it as a bit of my identity, and that's why I like Letterkenny so much, because I was that person. I got the opportunity to, people, like, they judged me from what they seen I was doing, not by my character. So I have a lot to hold there as well, too. Like, I can't just always point the finger at everybody else. I wasn't putting myself in great situations on stage. Like, if you walked out and there was a crowd and there was a fight in the middle of it and I was in it, like, that was me who put myself in that position. Mm. So people were only judging for what they could see.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I mean, you take it, you're owning it at the same time. You're not, you know, you're not blaming anyone else.
Not for sure.
Like, it was you. But you know what? At the end of the day, I think it shows, and we'll get to it. You know, you can change, and people are good, generally speaking. You know, there are always those will detract, but there are those that go, you know, even the prison system is designed, whether people like it or not, to rehabilitate, to give people the opportunity to say, right, I'm going to pay my debt to society and have another go.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work like that, but that's the way it's set up. So it's a lot of pressure. I know, like, you know, I'm the kind of fella was out every weekend when I was able to and all that. And I know the type that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Good lads, no harm in them, but you know yourself. So that was your late teens into your 20s?
Late teens and the 20s, I would say, like, around that 19-20 mark, I was probably at the peak of it then.
Was there any external influences? Like, did you look up to, I don't know, a Conor McGregor or whatever like that there? Or was this just all yourself? Because, you know, they talk about the manosphere and all that type of stuff. Was this completely organic, or do you think there was any influences?
No, I wouldn't say I would let anybody else have that much influence on myself. Now, I've done boxing and stuff like that. To be quite honest with you, like, I come from, like, my family bloodline would be Irish travellers. So when I was growing up and I was younger, somebody might have said, like, you know, oh, if I was going out with a girl and this guy was texting her as well, or I'd have had an argument with somebody, the first thing they would have said to you is, like, oh, you're a gyppo or something like that. And I would have, it would have been like red flag day bull.
Yeah.
And I knew it was coming from a young age. Like, that's why I probably really like primary school. I went to Lurgy Brack. I was completely oblivious to it. We never like had that interaction where it would have happened. And then you get into like your like fifth class, sixth class, somebody comes in and says it to you in your class, you maybe ended up in a fight in primary school over it. So I would probably always use violence as probably a levelling factor.
But at that age, I mean, what are you going to do? Get Kofi Annan into? Yeah. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do, but I mean, I know, and oftentimes when I was in secondary school, because I'm way older than you are, it would have been Catholics versus Protestants, or, you know, and all the bad words that are used for that. You'd see it go off all the time. Schools are different now, though. They have different policies in place and alternative pathways. And, you know, I think there's a good bit of work done in relation to that. So what were you working at over so your late teens, early 20s? So, because we're going to get to 2016. So what age would you have been in 2016?
How do you know what's date-wise? I'm absolutely terrible at them.
Like, if you tell me your age now, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'm 32 now.
Right, so you were 22. Mm-hmm. You were 22 in 2016. So, you know, you had sort of built this reputation. You were almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if you left the house, you knew what was going to happen one way or other, right?
Yeah.
So you got into a proper bother in 2016 and fell foul of the law. As much as you're comfortable talking about what happened there.
Was out on a night out. I was warned not to go, because it was rally weekend and there's people from out of town and drinks in and stuff like that. But yeah, you couldn't tell me anything at that age. I went out to the Mount Errigal and I got in a fight. Fella came out through two big doors, sent the sister flying. I was coming towards it. Not going to try and justify anything that happened. I didn't have the skills to deal with it, out from the same thing I used as everything else in my life, was taking my hands up and putting them to action. Sure as God, there was a couple of them and only two of us, and hey, your man fell, had his head in the tiles and had a bleed in the brain. So I went home, didn't think much of it, just thought it was another one of these fights that I've been in growing up. And about 2 weeks later, a knock came on the door. The guard was looking for us, took us up, held us for like 23 hours and took us to a special sitting the next day. The guy, unfortunately, was in Dublin Hospital and he was in an induced coma, so they didn't know really what kind of position he was going to be in. And then I rolled the dice enough times that I played stupid games and I won a stupid prize, and we ended up in court for 5 years over it. 3 of the years was every Tuesday, so this is probably when I started doing a lot more drinking and stuff like that, because hey, I know good men that done bad things growing up, and I seen them like maybe make a mistake when they were like 23, 24, and they come out when they're like 30, and they're trying to like relive their youth. So like I seen these boys hanging around with younger men and stuff like that. I probably panicked and wanted to experience a wee bit more life and stuff like that, but also had that element of fear that.
So you thought you were going away?
I thought I was going away, I definitely. And started training probably just previous to this, a wee bit of jiu-jitsu and learning how to actually do combats properly in a professional position. But also was doing it out of an element of fear. I knew if I went to prison that I could have been meeting some really bad people then.
When you heard that this man was in an induced coma with a bleed in the brain, how did that make you feel?
Absolutely petrified. Because who am I to play God with somebody else's life? Like, that man had kids, that man had a wife, that man had a job, and I was running around with a few drinks on me.
Did you feel guilty?
Definitely. Probably not so much at the beginning, because I was so afraid I would have squirreled anywhere to get out of it.
Yeah.
I was in a corner, like, and then the more I kind of, I would say probably actually about like a year into the court case, I was kind of like, you know, we've impacted somebody's life here, like, not just our own, because we've seen the impact it had in our own lives, like. So when I seen how much in it was, like, we were going to court and the man was in court and his family was in court as well too, like, so.
Yeah. How did he recover from his injuries?
Well, from what I know anyway, he had like a full recovery. There was a wee bit of a grey area at the beginning. We heard the victim impact statement and stuff on the sentencing day. And I don't actually know.
Have you ever spoke to him?
Never.
Would you like to?
I've actually been in a situation before where I went to a kickboxing class and I was asked to leave because a man's son was there. So the mum must have heard I was coming or something and they just asked me to leave. So I am happy enough if they ever want to keep a distance and stuff like that, because I've had altercations in before after, you know, where maybe friends or family of his on a night out would come up to me. I just walk away. Like, I'm like, obviously that's not his position, and people are probably have a strong opinion on that's their friend, that's their loved one, and they want to give me a piece of their mind. So I just have always stayed distance from it since.
See, because, you know, the reality is, and we're going to talk about how you've changed your life around, and that's important, and it's a good story too. But the truth is this is still there. It's relatively recent, and it also does still follow you about.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely does, eh?
You know, whether it's how you feel, but yeah, you're interacting with people that still are very hurt about it.
Yeah, well, even when I opened up my gym at the beginning in Glencare, there was fake profiles going about, people like commenting, even recently and underneath like a TikTok video, I had to delete the woman's comment because I actually felt quite embarrassed for her. She like wrote in underneath it, people must have forgot what this boy's done, and you know, voiced her opinion underneath it, and I made a video about it using her comment but removed it before I'd let her have any scrutiny over it because I wouldn't like to embarrass somebody on social media.
In other words, she'd have been ratioed for it.
Yeah, so then I was just like, hey, do you know what? I was like, I just told people then, like, I was like, I made a silly mistake, but hey, everybody can change, and that's a power we all hold as well, too, that I kind of like to refer to as, like, the day you turn your page is a new day, like, you're the author, you can start a new chapter, and you can change us around, like.
And how real is this change, Francie? Because, you know, there are cynics that might say that, you know, that, A, you've got two businesses that are successful. B, maybe, is this a facade because it's good for business? It's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Tie in a bit of mental health in there as well. And, you know, it's the story of redemption and success. And that works on social media. It works in real life. I'm only asking an honest question, not an opinion. Right?
No, for sure.
How real is it?
So what I actually heard a terminology maybe about 6 months ago about this was it was really hard for me to articulate in words how it would change. I would probably say, to be honest with you, it was a court case that changed me more than anything else. It was the fact that, like, when you wake up every day in the morning, you have the opportunity of not going to work if you don't want to go. You have an opportunity of lying in your bed.
Your liberty.
You have the control. I did not have that control. For 5 years, my life was in somebody else's hands. And I heard the term called post-traumatic growth.
Mm.
And I would say, without that court case, I wouldn't be in the position I am today. I'd have kept rolling that dice. I would have done something stupid and then possibly done something that would have got me prison time because I wasn't going to learn my lesson unless I got the lesson that was given to me, that was handed to me.
Yeah.
So I, of course, it sounds good on social media and stuff like that. And I probably look at it from, I know it's a real self-centered thing to say that like the court case benefited me, but it sounds like then I'm not thinking about the victim then either.
Yeah.
But like the court case definitely did benefit me because it's not a nice day to be in there, hey. Every Tuesday, you never know when your sentence day is coming. It's like playing duck, duck, goose, and you just don't know what day you're getting your shoulder tapped.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, we do know even with prison sentences and court cases, you see a lot of names coming up over and over again. It can be a bit of a conveyor belt in that. So there's obviously something in your personality or people around you that this did land with you and made that change, because for so many, it simply doesn't.
Yeah. I think it's a fact, too, that I was very fortunate. I was working on Evolve Menswear. And I actually even went into JP one day. I heard they were doing interviews, and I just landed in on the day because I handed in CVs. And I knew when they pulled up the name Francie and the second name McGinley, they might have had a prasad on who I was, or if maybe they heard what I've done in the past. So I heard there was interviews, one of my mates was down for one, and I just landed in. And I was like, oh, a female rang me for an interview, whatever. And I went in, and I met JP McCluskey. And I just said to JP, listen, I can't get a job in town. I've been trying. I've told him, explained everything. Like, you know, I'm not a bad person. I've done silly things. And this was before the court case. And obviously, JP gave me an opportunity. I says, I'll work for free for a week. I says, and you can still do your interviews, but I just want the opportunity. You're looking for a worker. I'm looking for work.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in Evolve for 6 years. And hey, it was just probably around that time. It kind of happened then as well, too. And the boys stuck with me. It was popping up on Donegal Daily. They could have given me an opportunity to sack me. Everybody and their bloody granny was voicing their opinion and underneath it, which was not a nice position to be in either. And being in the public floor on Evolve, which is a very busy menswear place, like, I got an opportunity to show people that I wasn't what they were reading or I wasn't what they were hearing, and built great relationships with people down there. People got to see me for who I was, not what I'd done. And I'll always be in debt to the boys because I learned a lot down there, but if I didn't have that job, I'd have probably pulled a poor me. I'd have probably still been on the dole. I'd have probably still been drinking. I'd have been still doing silly things throughout that court case.
Yeah, I got a few things sort of aligned and influences in your life just at the right time, it sounds like, and people that backed you a little bit as well.
Yeah.
You were sentenced to 2 years in prison. That was commuted or replaced by 240 hours of community service. That must have felt like, you know, here we are, second chance city then.
Yeah, definitely. Even then, finished the community service. The guards had my passport for 5 years, got that back, and went out to America with my cousin after that for a while. Worked in construction out there, and I would say that's the first time I've probably ever done a hard day's work.
Where's
in my
that?
Life. In Boston.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, heard me. I was out in Boston for 3 months. And that just kind of
chipped a fingernail and all.
The skin fell off my hands on the first day. I had to take 2 days off. But that kind of started giving me, I took a wee bit of weight off my shoulders because I didn't really go out a lot. I always say this, I turned my bedroom into a prison cell before I went to prison because I was afraid to go out and maybe get in trouble.
Which kind of points to the fact that this was a real change for you, because you could have said, right, dodged a bullet there. Here we are, Boston, huge Irish community.
Yeah.
I can regress into the 19-year-old Francie. I mean, it was there. The option was there for you, the truth be told.
Yeah. And I even had, like, altercations in Boston, and my cousin and me, like, you know, we might have left the bar one night. There was, like, a few words being said. He was like, geez, how you fair changed and all.
Mm.
And I was like, lad, nobody knows who I am. I don't have any identity to hold here. I was like, I can just leave. And I was like, if I'd learnt this skill a wee bit earlier in life, I'd have been grand, like, but... definitely just matured. My brain wasn't even fully developed at 22. Like,
yeah, even from that though, and that's, you know, relatively recent history. To going into your own to business yourself is still a major step. When did you decide to do that?
I was working in a medical factory, Medisize, doing 12-hour night shifts, making the best money I've ever made. As I said, I don't have a leaving cert. I was making the same money as boys with degrees.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I was doing it with selling my physical and mental well-being.
Mm.
And I would say, besides a court case, it was probably the lowest I ever was. But I paid well. It was a bit of a golden handcuff. And after about a year of it, I scrolled across a video of Michael Lennon from Belfast, ECA Belfast, chanting about a career in fitness. And I thought, you could only be a personal trainer if you're one of these boys who are absolutely massive and took steroids, or you were a millionaire and you opened up your own gym facility. So I started listening to it, kind of being on the fence a wee bit. Honestly, I used to wear my headphones in because you wore big overalls. It was a 12-hour night shift, and I used to listen to podcasts, Joe Rogan, stuff like that, people of influence. And that's where I think, like, it's quite powerful to listen to podcasts like this, because you're a smart man when you learn from your own mistakes. You're an intelligent man when you can learn from other people's. And hearing conversations that I would have never been in an opportunity of listening to, wouldn't have never been an opportunity of being in them rooms with intelligent people and ambitious people. So listening to these podcasts and stuff really started changing, like, my outlook and me and thinking, like, could I do something like that? And then just how lucky a lot of times in my life, and lucky that I scrolled across that video and seen Lenny chatting, and went to Belfast, became a PT, took 18 weeks, travelling up twice a week, learned practically on the gym floor, which was not a classroom thing for me, and it changed my life.
Mm. That was what, 2019, something around then?
Yeah, around 2019.
Okay, now. So you're all set. COVID.
COVID hit that. Right. So I was actually PTing out the back of my mum's house, and was doing, like, boxing pads and stuff because I had that wee bit of combat training and stuff, and it was just seeing it was a bit of a void in town. And I started doing pads with a guy, Christopher McLaughlin. He owned Intensity Fitness in Killyclug next to Highland Bakery. And he started giving me a wee bit more PT work and stuff down in his gym. And I was currently fighting MMA at the time then, and he sponsored me for the fight and was giving me a lot of business down there. And he just said to me, around the back of the Glencairn Inn was opening up. There was a gym in there previously and they were leaving. Would I be interested in going into business with him? I kind of actually thought he was taking a hand at me. So I went out for a run, up around the forestry. I came back down. I was like, hey, if you're serious, we can go and look at it. And yeah, we went down, looked at it. We were putting our name down in the lease, and COVID hit 2 weeks later.
Nightmare.
Now, we were very fortunate.
You hadn't signed it.
Paddy Dorian didn't charge us rent throughout COVID.
Brilliant.
So we were only getting the gym
so
ready.
So you weren't
on
the hook for that, yeah.
We weren't on the hook. And he was very good. Very good, this. Couldn't praise him enough. He gave us the unit. We were able to do it up. And how to be honest, we made the best out of COVID. Like, you know, we had a lot of gym equipment there ready to go. We were renting out stuff. Christopher was running classes at home, and I was like kind of running around delivering the dumbbells and stuff like that, because I had a letter saying I was don't ask me how I got this letter. I had a letter saying I was like an athlete because we were getting ready for.
All right, so you would have been you'd have had exclusions.
Yeah, we were called like elite athletes, so we had letters to like go and train as long as we were in a bubble and stuff like this. And yeah, guards pulled us or anything. They knew like I was out delivering equipment and gym equipment for people. But hey, we were able to profit off it as well too. You know, we made a rent at our own machine or a bike for like €30 a week or something, and people were looking after their health. So where our gym would have opened, and where our gym did open, it opened at a higher standard of a facility.
So when you start a gym, though, you know, how do you get people to sign up? Because there's a couple of groups out there, but obviously you've got people who are, I think there's a bit of gym loyalty.
Yep.
Like hairdressers or something, do you
know
what I mean?
Yeah,
100%. There's a loyalty there. And then you get the group that, you know, January 1st, they're going to have a lash at it. You sign up for 3 months, you never see them again. No shame, but that's the reality. And then you get people who are off the couch and they really want to make a difference. But how do you tap into those various markets? It's, you know, I mean, it's a big space, which is good, Letterkenny, obviously. But, you know, what was the plan?
At the time, I wasn't as savvy on social media as what I would have been. But Christopher already came with some members from his Intensity Fitness that we moved down, and then being a wee bit kind of well known through sports and stuff in town, we got a wee bit of a ricochet of me and him combining forces.
Cool. Yeah.
We're in a great location. Like there's not many gyms that have the same amount of houses around them within like a 1K radius as what Intensity Fitness does, so we were very fortunate that we were on people's doorsteps. Then kind of growing the business, then I always say it's easier for people to come and purchase off you when they know you, like you, and trust you. So I'm trying to, like, every gym is the same thing. People are nervous coming in.
Yeah.
People don't know what weights to lift. People don't know a lot of things. So me getting on camera and chatting it and trying to squish them limiting beliefs that they might have, and that they do have the ability to come into the gym, was probably, and still is, the main driving force of the business.
And what is your style? Softly, softly. Is it like, you know, if you want to be this is what you're going to have to do, so I need you to commit to me on this, or, you know, because there's all different ways of doing it, isn't it, you know, and what's your MO?
My main thing is getting strong.
Yeah.
Over everything. Unfortunately, a lot of females think they're going to like get like really bulky. I've been lifting weights since I've been like 11 or 12. I wish I was too bulky. Yeah. Like, you've got to be, like,
anybody. You would have to consume so much food to be able to transfer that into, I mean, you're probably like 8% body fat or less or something along those lines. So
yeah, I'm about 84 kg.
Yeah.
And because I love training, I'm always kind of an okay.
But unless
shape.
You drastically changed your diet.
Yeah, hugely. Like,
this is your optimum for your build.
Yeah.
So that applies then to a, you know, a 9, 10, 11 stone woman or fella, once they drill down into it, once they eliminate the fat, replace it with muscle, that's that.
Yeah, the key to longevity is muscle too. Like, put it like this, I know a lot of people who do running, and even my uncle recently said to me, you know, geez, my chest turned into a wee bit of a boob lad. I would need to lose a bit of weight, but he doesn't carry a lot of weight.
I
was like, sir, that's not weight loss. I was like, that's a muscle deficiency.
Yeah.
You used to have muscle there that's solid,
true,
and now it's decayed. And I was like, that's why like people in the back of their arms, they're jiggly. Now, you could see like thin women or men out running, and they might like tell you that the back of their arms jiggly. That's a muscle deficiency.
Yeah, that's the bingo wings, as they used to call
them. The bingo wings is what they call them. And like, I always like refer back to my grandfather. He passed away maybe about like 6 or 7 years ago now. I remember like 3 days before he passed away, he got up out of his bed, walked to the bathroom, went to the bathroom himself, came back out on his bed. His lungs weren't doing great. And I was like, not until a couple of years after, I was like, muscle's the key to longevity.
Mm.
Muscle's what gets you up out of your bed. That's what gets you moving. And you don't hear people losing a physique. You hear people building a physique.
Yeah.
So muscle is the key.
And I presume it supports hips, knees, you know.
Bone density.
Those joints that tend to begin to fail us, you have stronger muscles, presumably it takes off the What do you think about, like, because it's quite interesting that you talk there about, you know, someone goes, well, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be necessarily bulky or what have you. And that talks to a misunderstanding, really, of how it all works, I'm sure. Now we have what they call fat jabs, right, which delivers perhaps what the physique people want in, you know, shorts and a T-shirt or a dress, right? But it doesn't do anything about building muscle. And I think people see it with the, you know, with some of the things that happen to your body or to your face on these drugs, because you're just stripping, you know, content out of your skin, and it's just you know, it might look good as the same clothes, but it what's your feelings on those?
So a lot of things in my life was probably judged out of arrogance because I don't know enough about them, or I haven't seen enough experience yet with them. So at the beginning, I was really reluctant against them because just looking at them, thinking, like, they've already increased by 300% on price from when they came onto our shelves at the beginning and now. And, like, realistically, the key to any success is delayed gratification. So, like, even, like, you starting this podcast, there might be a lot of views now or whatever, but, like, in due time, it is going to grow and it's going to blossom. Yeah. Where if you just, like, had your first one and was like, oh, when I got 1,000 views, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
Where my thing is, like, you need to, if you want to be, I do a story with this. If I'm Mary and I'm a size 18 dress and I become Mary who's a size 10 in a dress, they're rented results because you've used something externally to get you them results. But realistically, the good stuff you've completely skipped here, because the good stuff is the person you become on the way of Mary size 10.
And of course, then you stop the jabs and size 12 can become size 16, 18 or 20 again.
Exactly.
So it's not, it is your short term solution, and they're fantastic. Listen, obesity is a disease. We've got a drug that can address that. But most of the people in your industry says, look, at you need to also, if you're going to go down that route, you also need to be working on your frame physically.
Yeah. So about 30% of the weight you will lose will be muscle mass.
Yeah, which and is huge, isn't it?
Which is huge. Believe me, muscle is hard to gain. Like, lean muscle mass is a commodity that a lot of people would pay a lot of money for. But I completely changed my outlook on it then, because I had members come to the gym who used fat loss jabs. Mm. Now, even in-body scanner measures visceral fat, lean body mass, and body fat percentage. So when you stand on, we just don't see a weight on a scale, because you could add muscle, completely change your physique, and still be the same weight on the scales. So it was actually a fella came in, and he was transparent with me. I could say there's probably females in there who aren't so transparent, and he told me, listen, I've lost 8 kg on the fat loss jabs, but a lot of people do their research before they take these jabs, so they know what's coming with it. And then he reached out to start training with us. In total, I think he might have lost like 17, 18 kg. And the doctors, this is where it kind of gets a wee bit of a grey area for me, the doctors seen that his weight plateaued and tried to double his dose.
Okay.
But I had him on the in-body scanner. His muscle mass was increasing and his body fat was dropping. Mm-hmm. But the doctor wasn't aware of that because he didn't use that metric of measurement.
Yeah, of course.
And he tried to double his dose. So I was like, you've no need for a double dose.
Well, you see, people expect an awful lot of our doctors, and this is not to defend them. They're general practitioners. So they know a little about an awful lot.
Yeah.
Whereas you're an expert in your field. Maybe there should be more communication in that regard, or something whereby they can tap into the likes of your expertise, because it sounds to me like you know, potentially if he had doubled his dose, it would have started undoing the work that was being done.
Yeah, for sure. And I think fat loss jabs are a great tool for momentum. Momentum's a scary thing.
Yeah.
If I can take 2 or 3 kg off you, and then you start thinking, like, you know, geez, I've lost a wee bit of weight there. Maybe I have a wee bit more confidence to go to the gym. I know about the muscle and stuff. Now I feel better in myself. I'm ready to double down on this. But I think you need to use fat loss jabs as a relay race. Mm. You might start the race, but you've got to finish it.
This might be a bit controversial, but an observation, and maybe I'm right or maybe I'm wrong, but there seems to be almost an exact correlation between the introduction of weight loss jabs and the complete disappearance of the body positive message.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of like bigger people, men or women on the catwalk, on the front of newspapers, being celebrated into, that's gone.
Yeah.
That's gone now. And you can, in my head anyway, it's just astonishing that we had this movement that was about, you know, be whoever you are. and then it's almost completely disappeared once a relatively easy way to lose weight came along on the scene.
There was an
There needs to be a study on that, I think, if there hasn't already.
People are trying to justify their excuses. An excuse is something you get to fight for. And
which is a human error. That's what we do,
right? Yeah, 100%. And we'll all try and justify why we can't. And like here, I challenge my own limiting self-belief sometimes. I said recently, I was at like a work thing with boys in Portugal. It's all our gym owners and stuff. And I was like, geez, I've never read a book, but I've done loads of audiobooks and podcasts and stuff. I was like, I just don't have the attention to be able to do it. I could be reading a page and taking nothing. And your man challenged me on it. He was like, I think that's a limiting self-belief, Francie. He's like, I think you could read a book. He says, but it's a skill you're going to have to do. So, six chapters in the book I started 2 days ago, but I had to go back and reread like two or three pages because I did it. My thought went somewhere else, and I was like, who am I kidding? I didn't read any of them pages. So it's something like, you know, that I would say to justify, oh, I have maybe ADHD or something. I would try and justify it with these excuses. But then if there was something that I consume all this book within, like you know, reading something like a synopsis on ChatGPT, what values does this book give you? Like, I was taking a shortcut, and other people, unfortunately, they'll fight for an excuse. They'll tell me they don't have the money, they don't have the time, they don't have this, but all of a sudden they've got 7 hours screen time. They've watched two of their favourite episodes on Netflix. They're just eight a weekly basis. Maybe looks like they're, what, a month membership could be with us. So we all like to fight for
We set up our own barriers. We do it like, you know, sometimes I'll be chatting to Lee in the morning or someone in the morning says, you know, like, I'm too busy. The truth is that's not the truth.
Yeah.
That it's not, it's how I'm using my time, right? If the truth be told. I have a lot of time.
Yeah.
We all have a lot of time, but we're too busy to do many, many things in life to sit down and do the homework with the kids. I would have said when the older boys were, I don't have time for this. It's not true.
Yeah.
It's not really true because I still was watching Wheeler Dealers at 6.
So
I was able to bang that out, right? Yeah. That's an hour I could have done with the homework.
Yeah.
So you've got the Intensity Fitness. There's another gym open too now as well?
I'm opening another gym in Letterkenny.
Right, why?
I'm calling it the Social Club.
Mm.
Reason being, hey, actually, the last maybe 6 months I've been doing a lot of training on my own. And coming from a background of a lot of sports, and even like when I was boxing and I was competing in MMA and stuff like that, it looks like you might be the only person in there competing, but it came with a tribe feeling behind. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we were blood, sweat and tears. And like them guys that I trained hard with, I mightn't see them in 2 or 3 years, but I could text them boys tomorrow and be like, listen, I need a hand moving all this stuff out of you. Could you give me your shot? They'll be there. Like, so I think we're kind of forged in that hard work. And Intensity Fitness is... it'll always be my baby. Like, it's you come in, we lift weights, we progressively overload it. There's a great environment there. I'm really community driven. Like, I'll always put wee incentives in there, and we have 24/7. You're not allowed into the gym unless you're a member, because I want you to come in that you know each other's name. The coach knows all your names, and that's an environment I grew up in. The coaches knew my name. I went into boxing, the coaches knew my name. Gaelic, it was all like we're a bunch of brothers. But this last while, my mates have been getting jobs doing S&A, the other guys got really busy, the other boys away to Australia, and I was like, spending a lot of time on my own recently.
Yeah.
And I was like, spending a lot of time training on my own. And then realistically, I have probably about 2 or 3 mates that would have the ability of going out and running a slow, steady 10K, maybe around the hour mark or so. And I was fine to see them conversations I have with them guys, and I'm out running, like slow, steady, like, conversations I wouldn't have sitting in a pub, or conversations I wouldn't have sitting having a coffee, because you're kind of doing stuff together, and I think they're great. So now I just kind of see a wee bit of a void on, like, my gym's solely weightlifting. There's cardio aspects to it, but I would never try and change the identity and Intensity Fitness, because I've had so much loyalty from the members for years.
Wouldn't be fair on them.
So, exactly. And plus, I know the power that, like, doing hard things, doing boxing classes, blowing off that wee bit of stress and stuff. I'm bringing a different identity to this new gym. I'm going to be making it really social. Like, a lot of my gym members now in Intensity at the minute are mums, busy professionals and stuff like that. They want to use their weekends elsewhere. But there's a lot of maybe younger people in Letterkenny, maybe people who don't have kids, maybe people who's just back from Australia. And I definitely would say there's probably a good bit of loneliness getting experience there, unless you're in the pub. And I think we all seen the stats over Christmas. The pubs are dying out. And I think nightclubs died out after COVID because we had so much socialising to get caught up in. And then now I think people are people are feeling what the endorphins feel like.
Young people are more inclined to be worrying about what they're going to look like in the summer or what they look like online. I mean, there is a big move away from alcohol. So it sounds like, it's like a gym social club then, is it really?
100%, yeah, that's what it's going to be. I'm even looking at getting like a shipping container, putting kayaks on it, giving people like something to do at the weekends, and I've maybe given like some like teens an opportunity to come down and train with and stuff. So it's definitely, hey, I see the void for it in Letterkenny, especially now with the growth of like Hyrox and Trike and stuff. You know, I say this even to my own members, like, you get a wee bit better at being a gym owner when you realise people are big kids at heart. You just have to give them a game to play.
That's it.
And like, I'm running like a €500 competition now at the minute. It's a €500 voucher for Atlantic Travel. But I've got wee like things in there. You know, if you go and do Hard as Oak with us in Derry, it's like a wee obstacle course. You'll get tickets into the draw. And I don't do the Biggest Loser. I do Volume Negates Luck. No, the more tickets you have an opportunity. And it's just a game. That's all it really is. It's just a game.
When do you hope to have the new place up and running?
I'm ambitious with time. I would say possibly around.
I think impatient.
That would be the one too. But you know what? I have time to spare, and I was absolutely blown away when I opened up the social media page for it. Possibly 3-4 days ago, there's like nearly 700 people following the page, and I'm asking them what do they want to see. A lot of people are like saying, you know, they would like a Pilates class and stuff like that. Other people are like voicing that, and I'm happy to build it and see what comes.
Do you see, when you encounter young lads or girls, a bit of your younger self in them? Do you try and, you know, you talked about boxing, right? And the great thing about boxing is that relationship with your coach, that influence, the discipline, you know, controlled anger or aggression rather than it just being sporadic and all over the place. Do you see a role? Are you in a role, or do you see yourself having a role? And there's no wrong answer to this. Of trying to say, look, I see a bit of you in me. Here's a better path for you.
Yeah. Do you know what? I probably would have liked to have somebody like me growing up, to be honest.
Yeah.
Somebody who probably wasn't the perfect start and stuff like that. And then being vocal enough about it. Because, hey, don't get me wrong. Like, it's not too easy to come and show everything that you've made mistakes on at times. Like, so a lot of people, like, try and get on social media and portray that they're perfect, and I never will say that. I'm not perfect.
But that's really, really important. And I'll be honest with you, if I can, I know I asked you a question, but it's selling something that can't be achieved, even in the area of mental health. You know, often someone becomes a mental health advocate, right? And everything was going great. Then it was really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Then everything's going great now, and they're releasing a book. But if you've got poor mental health, that's not attainable.
Yeah.
And what that actually can do is make you feel worse, because it's a lovely story for that person, and now they're flogging a book, or they've got a website with subscriptions or a podcast that they sell ads on, and that is fine, no hate. But you have to make sure that you're not compounding a problem by trying to sell something that people feels unachievable and actually hurts them more.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it's better to be honest and say, you know, nothing's perfect. Life's not perfect. You never get to exactly where you want to go, but there is a pathway where you can improve yourself.
Yeah, I think there's definitely value in being content where you are, but never being complacent where you are. And even that mindset coach I have, like, his name's Phil Brady, Vitamin P on social media. And Phil's, he's taught me stuff about myself. I always say it's like an empty room with no doors or windows.
Mm.
But more conversations I used to have with Phil at the beginning, like, I would learn, like, oh, you know, you can crack this window, or something I was holding, like, closer that I never knew. Like, even said to me one day, he was like, Francie, you know, you do a lot of premeditated resentment. Mm. He was like, you treat people like they've already done the thing. And I was like, oh my God, I've done that my whole life. But because I didn't know of the terminology of it or the thought process behind it, but see, once he told me, I realised, like, it was something I'd done to protect myself my whole life. Like, but now that I know it, it was like he gave me a key to a door that I didn't even know it existed. Yeah. So I'm never going to be perfect. I'm probably going to make a lot of mistakes moving forward too, but I'm happy enough to show that the heart's on my sleeve when I'm trying to do it. Like, and even like yesterday, a couple of my mates were slagging me in a group chat. They were like, oh, you must be making some money and all now. Like, honestly, it's a fulfillment side for me now. Like, I've been in a position where I was unhappy and made money.
You've always been driven by money.
Yeah.
come on. 13 euro out cutting forests for a tenner.
Hey, do you know what? Somebody actually got on to me about my holidays, and I was like, hey, I couldn't afford to go on holidays until I was like 19, and my passport got took off me when I was 22 for 5 years. I was like, I'm making up in lost time. But hey, do you know what? This is honest. Like, I don't pay myself a massive wage every week, but I don't spend a wee lot of money because I'm around the town. The gym's too. I live in Glencairn. My gym's in Glencairn. I grew up in Old Town, James Arkin Court, across the road from Nowdock. Like, Old Town and Glencairn, that's where the new gym's going to be, is Old Town. They're two places that I grew up. They're my identity. They're my people. Mm. They're like, anybody's welcome. And hey, don't get me wrong, making money's great, but I've been in a position where I had money in my bank account and I was never happy. And I would probably say my jobs, but because I never knew the terminology, I used to be like, geez, I feel wild selfish, you know, when I get somebody in good shape.
But that goes back to that, was it content was the word you used?
Yeah.
But that's, even in finance, contentment is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get to a position, like, it's such a gift. There's so many people struggling. If you get to a point whereby you don't primarily have to worry about something, be it your mental health, mm-hmm. your level of fitness, or your finances, content is the win for me.
100%.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, like, if I won 2 million euro on the lotto, I think I would go nuts, and I think my quality of life would actually deteriorate.
Yeah, on Heidi, you know what? I was actually the FTD brothers. I went out with zero training and ran a marathon with them. But the reason I ran it was because when I was out there, the boys were contagious. Like, we're not grateful enough. I'm not grateful enough. Probably it should be the first skill we should try and practice every day is a bit of gratitude.
Yeah.
I was just chatting to a friend of mine before I come up here. His sister's very unwell in Dublin. And he was like, lad, I'd be stressing all the time, trying to get this, trying to get that. He says, my sister would do anything to leave a bed now at the minute. He says, money's not everything. He says, making it's not everything. He says, getting out, going to be able to train, get a coffee with somebody. Like, we don't practice it enough. And we always experience it. Like, when I went out running with the boys, like, they have 14 years left to live, and there's 99% chance they're going to get this dementia that has a rapid
but 100% more positive than most of us.
Let's be honest. They will never have an idle day. Mm. The 14 years that they have now, they will live probably the same quality of two lives.
Isn't it funny? What seems like a death sentence, pardon the crude language, but that's what people might call it if they were sitting at home, so no point sugar. You know, in a way, it's not a gift any of us would want.
Yeah.
But they know what they have and what they need to achieve in that amount of time, which is something we don't have. If we could just put ourselves in that position. Because We have such a little amount of time here. Mm-hmm. And if you're blessed, you get 8 decades.
Yeah.
But that's nothing. I think you can write off the first 20 years, 60, as an adult, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe 40 in good health if you're really lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah,
we have to make the most of it, don't we?
100%. And it is. Everything's perspective. Everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why social media is a good thing and a bad thing, because comparison's a thief of all joy. It's a really well-known saying now. And I think we've all done it. Like, especially now when you see even like females who maybe already have spectacular figures on social media, and you see they're editing their photos. Maybe somebody else has got a platform that actually calls out all these things. But then females are looking at themselves in the mirror. And I know anyway, like, I have a narrator in my head. And usually after alcohol.
Internal monologue.
Oh, hey, usually after alcohol and stuff, I am the worst person
in
the world.
Everyone doesn't have an internal monologue.
Did I not?
No.
I might have too.
No, there are some people don't. Like, everything. I'm looking at that camera now.
Yeah.
Everything is. I know it's something you're slightly talking different about, but I just thought it weird.
Yeah, I think a voice to you have to speak to yourself well.
Yeah,
and it's a skill everybody needs
some
to learn.
People don't do it at all. That's what I think. But anyway, listen, it's been great having you in, Francie. Listen, there's a whole space of mental health we could have got into.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of talk about that, and I think really an awful lot of we've talked about that is talking about not just physical health but mental health, but without actually using those two words.
Yeah,
really.
I would, you know, there's a lot of action involved, and like I had my first experience of an anxiety attack when I was going through our court case. I didn't even know how to explain it or articulate to somebody what was going on. And my sister seen it happen to me, and she would have never really, she'd have thought, like, you know, it was people who are mentally weak that was having these things.
Mm-hmm.
And she was driving me down to my solicitor in Buncrana, and she was like, "Now I know it's real." She says, because if you can have it, anybody can have it. Because I'd be quite happy-go-lucky and stuff like that.
Yeah, mentally strong, ordinarily.
Yeah, but I definitely think, like, you're mentally strong when you do hard things. And you're mentally strong when you do hard things with other people. And, like, I just think, like, we're tribe animals. If we lost all power tomorrow and we couldn't heat our houses and stuff like that, communities would come together.
Yeah.
And I feel like phones and social media and stuff like that, they bring us close to people far away and far away from people close.
Yeah,
I think we're way too distant.
It's not even a reality.
Nah.
It is. It's a virtual reality at best. And I think that's why you see that first with gyms, because people are forced into the same space. You don't have to speak to people per se, you will.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a community.
Yeah, and I think that gets neglected with a lot of young people who are, as you're saying, a lot more conscious about how they look and stuff. But you go into public gyms, everybody's walking around with headphones on.
Mm.
Nobody wants to interact and stuff like that. And a problem shared is a problem.
You're doing 12-hour night shift with headphones in.
Aye. That's because there was nobody to chat there.
Come here, it's tight.
Yeah.
Night shifts shorten your life. Like, they are tough.
Yeah.
And one of my sons did night shifts. As you say, money's fantastic, right? But you can just see yourself. You can see yourself. You're losing bits of yourself every week almost.
Yeah, all your health and everything. Like, I actually, funny enough, I had a conversation this morning with a girl in the gym. If you don't turn up, I'll text you. You pay a wee bit more of a premium with us, right? You come in. It's not a youth club. You're not fighting for a bench. We structure the training, make sure you're doing everything safely, and then push you on when you're there.
Mm.
But if you don't turn up, I'll text you. I'll be like, Greg, where the hell are you at? You haven't been in all week and stuff. And that's just me trying to add that wee bit of extra service to you. But then I don't know what's going on in people's lives.
Of course.
And I'm sending them these texts. So I met a female this morning and she was kind of explaining to me, you know, I'm doing like American hours and I only slept 3 hours last night and I've got to get home. And she's a newborn, like a couple of months old and stuff. And I was just like, sorry about the messages. I was like, I never knew that any of this was going on, because she mightn't turn up to the class.
But she would have filtered them herself. She would understand what's going on.
So I end up giving her a hug this morning. I was like, listen, money's not everything. You look after yourself, because you're never going to be able to buy that time back with your children, and how a lot of work stress and stuff like that probably impact relationships. And when they impact relationships, your health, your physique, everything else comes after. So yeah, I think you said, like, contentment should be something that we're all aiming for. Like,
listen, it's been great chatting to you, Francie. And it's a journey you're still on, be it business, be it post 2016, be it yourself as an individual, whatever it is. You got the recognition last year, nominated Young Business Person of the Year. There's a bit of controversy around that, but we won't get into that as well. But it's onwards and upwards for you, but it's an ongoing piece of work, internally, externally, I would say. I could be wrong.
Do you know what? I like being busy. Like, I think the idle mind's the devil's playground.
Yeah.
I spent a good part of my life on the dole and stuff like that, and wasting time, and like, honestly, I get so much job satisfaction and fulfillment out of it. I probably feel like if I could bottle it up and pass it over to people, and even with training and with business, I think, like, it doesn't have to be fitness. I think absolutely everybody has some talent that they could probably profit out of, like, probably like as a side hustle. And guess what? It's like a high tide raises all boats. I've got a skill that I can help people make feel better and do more things and feel like they're in a community. And of course it profits, but like, as
I think too, I don't want to sort of read the room wrong.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think you also met some of the right people at the right time. And this is a credit to you. Sort of said, all right, okay, here's an opportunity, or here's something I can learn, or here's an opportunity for personal growth. And maybe, you know, some people listening might need to sort of recognize where there are opportunities and take them. Because it sounds to me very much like that it's not all coincidence. It's just you open some doors, but also when someone held it open, you walked through it.
Yeah, well,
you know, that sort of way.
Even this opportunity today, coming in and talking with yourself, like, you have a huge platform, you host great shows, like, there's obviously an element of, like, that wee bit of shyness, wee bit of imposter syndrome. Like, who am I to come up here and chat about these kind of things and stuff? But if you don't take these opportunities, they're never going to present themselves. But I am 100%. I think everybody will get lucky at a couple of times in their life. And that's where you see risk or opportunity. And I suppose it's being maybe same thing, being an idiot, maybe not seeing all the risk and only seeing opportunity.
Yeah, I'm not sure others will frame it quite like that, but hey, it's your life. Listen, Francie McGinley, thank you so much for calling up.
Thank you, Greg.
Yes, indeed. Thanks one more time to Francie McGinley. And that was this week's episode of the Greg Hughes Podcast. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to tell a friend.
And you can listen back to previous episodes as well. We are across all streaming platforms. Just search the Greg Hughes podcast, or indeed listen straight on the Highland Radio website in the playback section. We've got new episodes for you every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. If you've any feedback for us, please feel free to email the researcher and producer of this podcast. That is Caroline Orr, and her email address is caroline.orr@highlandradio.com. But for me and all the team, we'll chat to you real soon.